selected. Any fool can get elected, and most of them do. But it takes real ruthlessness to get selected in the first place.
Yes, him again.
Angela was unimpressed by the news.
But you're not tough enough, darling. You're not manipulative. And the Labour Party hardly exists down here in Pebbleton. You're going to have to move. You're going to have to move out. Just when we're so happy. Politics. It's a horrible world. Look in the newspapers. They'll have you for breakfast.
She was doing the washing up and scrubbed the plates as if they were guilty. Then she came over and kissed Caroline lightly.
I just don't want you to get hurt.
You mean you don't want me to bugger off up to London when I'm so useful down here looking after the boys? Caroline was cleaning the table, but was so distracted that she was simply sweeping crumbs onto the floor.
You've only just given up that ridiculous city job of yours. You're beginning to enjoy life a bit. Why make yourself miserable?
Angela was gripping her wine glass so hard that it broke. She checked her hand for blood, then threw the glass away, saying nothing. Caroline certainly looked miserable, but she straightened up and forced a smile.
Because we're all put on this planet to do something. You've always said it. I've always known it. And I think this is what I can do.
Thanks, no doubt, to the master, Caro had been put on the national candidates list. She made several stabs by phone and email for various seats whose local parties clearly had no interest in her. One morning, after several months poring over the Guardian for news about sitting MPs dying or retiring, she had jumped into her Saab and headed for Northamptonshire. The constituency of Barker needed a new candidate to replace Leonard Lomax, a former miner who was retiring before the next election at the age of 78. She stayed at the only hotel in Barker, a travel lodge, and in the 2 days she spent there, she met enough constituency workers and officials to think that, lesbian or not, she was in with a chance. There were lots of women in the local party who were aching to give the old male establishment a smack in the face, she told Angela. But as they walked together up the steep hill that overlooked Pebbleton Church, listening to the faint distress of sheep on the other side of the valley, Angela ran through the other candidates.
Sweetie, they're a formidable lot, you have to admit it. There's the guy who used to be the Environment Minister. Everyone in the party loves him. There's the one who wrote all the speeches for the two Eds. He's had a lot of telly exposure. And the media are always gushing about him because he used to be in the army. And there's that woman who lost her seat at the last election and who's supposed to be in the running for Mayor of London. Caro, you are sweet and you are pretty and you are clever, but you're not in their league.
They were standing in the lee of a beach coppice, hidden from the rest of the world. Angela leaned over and cupped Caro's face and began kissing her gently. But Caro pulled back.
You haven't seen me in action, Vicar. You haven't seen me really try. I love you and I love all of this, I really do. But politics is something I know I can do well. Every week you preach about helping the less fortunate. Every week, more money from the collection than the church can afford goes off to Syria or Burundi or wherever.
I know you mean what you say, but you have to let me do my bit as well, Angela cut in.
Off in the world, away from this little hidden valley. I thought this was paradise when I first saw it, and when you came here to join me, I knew it was.
And now you're off. Northamptonshire, then London, then who knows where.
I do respect what you want, Caro, but with this little by little, you're leaving me. I think you only get one chance at happiness in this life. You only get one paradise. And if you walk out of it, you can't walk back in again. So, I'm sorry, darling, Caro. But no, I can't do this.
Caro said no more but pulled Angela's face towards hers. She saw again the intense, freckled little face of the girl she had first met all those years ago, and she thrust her tongue into her mouth. They fell onto a carpet of leaf and moss and made love. Stained with moisture and mud, they were noticed as they walked back through the village. But nobody said anything. They liked their vicar, and in Pebbleton they still believed in the oldest, most sacred law of English life: live and let live. There had always been comments, of course. Angela was the first female vicar in the area, and when Caroline started arriving down from London most weekends, the obvious conclusions were drawn. Lady Broderick, the nearest thing Pebbleton had to a squire, had spoken to Angela one night after evensong.
"Now, vicar, you know I'm a traditional soul. I'm thrilled that you've brought back the King James and the Book of Common Prayer and some of the good old hymns, which, trust me, is why fewer of the pews are empty. No incense yet, and I approve of that as well. So please believe that I'm also speaking for others when I say that, while I'm a modern woman, I regard unnatural practices as a sin. Forgive me for speaking so plainly."
Angela, scarlet, replied,
"Lady Broderick, we are married. You are speaking to a married woman."
"Not as far as I'm concerned, young lady."
"The law..."
Lady Broderick's jaw tightened.
"The church..."
Angela had stood very still, scarcely breathing.
"But ours is a God of love, Lady Broderick, and a God of infinite mercy. He made us as we are."
"He did indeed, Vicar. He did indeed. But that doesn't stop us from trying to live according to his instructions. Unnatural practices trouble me.
But what I was going to say, and we're much less narrow-minded around here than you might think, is that as far as I'm concerned, so long as we don't have rainbow flags hanging from the rafters and kissing in the pulpit, your life is your own."
There were, of course, gossips in the village. The old men who hung around outside the hairdressers every morning waiting for the daily arrival of the newspapers had a lot to say.
"What is it that Lizzie's actually do?"
"Ha! That's the question. Fiddling around, I should wonder. Fingers and such like."
"Turns your stomach."
"All right for you, Mac. Worse for me."
"Why's that?"
"My own poor dear wife is cold, Lizzie. Always has been. Can't look at her in the same way now."
"Better go and get some advice from the vicar."
A noise somewhere between catarrh and a filthy laugh greeted the arrival of the small mobile shop, laden with tabloids, full-fat milk, and cigarettes. Not long after their walk on the hill above the church, Caroline returned to Northamptonshire for the final selection meeting. In Pebbleton, it was a long, grey wait. The following evening, Angela had just fed the boys their supper and packed them off upstairs to do some homework. Still no word. Oddly, nothing on Twitter. She had a meeting with the community policeman ahead of her and was feeling lonely and scratchy. She was just about to pour herself a fortifying glass of wine when Caro burst in. As usual, she was like a warm wave of sunshine on a February morning. The vicarage immediately seemed to glow a little brighter. Well!
Well?
Good news and bad news.
Bad news first.
The bad news is I'm not going to be around here quite so much because... Caroline imitated blowing a trumpet.
I've got it! You saw them off?
Angela was excited and pleased despite herself. I know. Impossible. But I did it.
Stop right there, said Angela.
This calls for a drink. She brought a bottle of Suffolk gin, some tonic water which had lost its fizz, and a small bottle of bitters to the kitchen table. They sat for a moment in silence, drinking and listening to the sound of the wind in the Douglas firs behind the vicarage. Anyway, began Caro, I had a stroke of luck to start with. You remember that the guy who used to write the Ed speeches called me and suggested we travel up by train from London together. When I got to the station, the others were there too, the old environment minister, who looks just like he does on the telly, very smart, and the woman who was going to run for mayor of London. So, we got one of those arrangements with a table and four seats, and we talked all the way up there. It was pretty obvious that they saw me as the innocent. They wanted to know what I was going to say, of course. Well, you know me. All that time in the city, busily researching away. Always prepared. So, I had it ready. Lomax, I said.
The MP who's retiring?
That's the one. Lenny Lomax, I told them, was the very model of a good old-fashioned Labour MP. Started life down the mine. Strong union man, collected the sub, strong as an ox and a bastion of good sense in Parliament. Way back he supported Kinnock against the militants. Didn't like Blair's Iraq war, but served as a whip nevertheless. Leonard was a rock. Leonard was everything the constituency needed. I told them I was just going to say how great Leonard was and promised to do my best to be just the same kind of MP. And they all nodded at me and pretended not to take much notice. When we got there, we were picked up and whisked straight into the selection meeting. I chose to speak last. And they did it, one by one, the complete idiots. They got up on the stage and picked up the microphone and promised to be exactly like Leonard Lomax. First, the clever journalist who wrote the Ed speeches said he wanted to be like Leonard Lomax. Then the environment minister said that, as a long-time admirer, he wanted to be like Leonard Lomax. Then the woman who isn't going to run as mayor of London said she knew Leonard Lomax very well and she wanted to be just like Leonard Lomax. They stole your speech? The sods! Angela was genuinely outraged on Caroline's behalf. Up to a point, dear heart. What was Lenny Lomax? He was a drunk, he was idle, and he was an idiot. He treated the General Management Committee like shit. He was a complete embarrassment for years. Everyone in the local party hated him, so while those three were praising him, I could see the faces in the room getting longer and longer, and I could feel the temperature dropping like a stone. When my turn comes, the first thing I say is, I don't think we need a microphone in this room, do we? We're all friends here. Then I go and sit down at the front of the stage so I'm almost in the audience rather than talking at them. And then I say, well, poor old Lenny Lomax. I understand a bit of sentiment, but frankly, he wasn't a good representative for this seat. He didn't work hard enough and he didn't treat his constituents with sufficient respect. I'm afraid I'm sitting in front of you today because I don't want to be Leonard Lomax. And there was this huge cheer, and they started to clap. And then I made a few jokes, and I said that I was a Christian and a gay woman, and that if they were bothered by either of those things, now was the time to say so. But they were just so pleased I wasn't drunk, brutish old Lenny Lomax, that I won by a mile. Caro was so pleased by her own cleverness that she hadn't noticed Angela's return to the early evening gin and tonic. And Angela was so blown away by Caro's story that she'd poured herself a second one.
"You are quite something. Maybe you were born to be a politician after all. I'm going to miss you horribly. I'm going to miss you so much, it hurts me inside as if I'd swallowed broken glass. But I'm going to be with you every step of the way. After you're elected, I'll take time off midweek and train it to London. And you, madam, will find ways to get down here. We will do this together."
As the sun went down and the smell of the wood-burning stove began to percolate through the old vicarage, the two women snuggled together on the sofa and talked about the new, very difficult but not impossible, and exciting life ahead. Politics Today,